Thank you for the introduction. Good evening. Buenas noches. Buenas tardes. I also want to acknowledge that we're on unsurrendered Coast Salish territory. So I'm just going to go through a series of slides, and I really had to parse. I've done extensive research on Goldcorp, and I did a report in 2007, which is called Investing in Conflict, and it's available online. It's about 30 pages long with almost 200 footnotes. And I obviously had to go through and sort of pick what was pertinent for this evening, and so I'm not even really skimming the surface, but I'm going to give it a try. So I decided that I would sort of say that my presentation tonight is still investing in conflict. Since the 3 or 4 years that I've been researching this company, very little has changed. So this is a slide I like to start with. It's the corporate structure of Goldcorp. And just to give people an idea of what we're talking about when we're talking about what sometimes ranks as the world's second largest gold mining company. And so what we have in the circles here are producing mines, and in between them are shell companies, also known as subsidiaries or tax shelters. So between the headquarters, which they have in Vancouver and also in Ontario, and the Marlin mine in Guatemala, for example, Goldcorp has three subsidiaries in Barbados, a fourth in the Cayman Islands, finally another subsidiary in Guatemala, and a producing mine in Guatemala. So just to sort of give an idea of, you know, this company is known for, I would say euphemistically speaking, extremely careful and prudent tax planning. So that just gives an idea. They have mines in Canada, they have mines in the U.S., in Mexico, in Guatemala, and in Chile, in the Dominican Republic, and Argentina. I'm just going to talk about a few of those projects tonight. So here's just another slide to give you an idea of the size of the company. The revenues in 2009 were almost $3 billion. Of that, their net earnings were close to $600 million. Their total assets are over $20 billion. That means the value of all of their mining projects, proven and probable reserves, et cetera. Last year, they produced 2.42 million ounces of gold. And they're also producing silver as well as base metals, including lead and zinc. And so the mines are the dots. Not all of them are in production, but most of them are. I really had to put this guy's picture on the slide. I actually had to use the Wayback Machine to find it. This is the former CEO of Goldcorp. His name is Rob McEwen. And Goldcorp was incorporated in 1994, according to their documents that they filed with the New York Stock Exchange. And their major project in Ontario initially was called the Red Lake Mine. And the Red Lake Mine, for those of you who are up on your labor history, is the site of the longest mining worker strike in Canada. And this is while it was owned by Goldcorp. The strike lasted from 1996 to 2000. And this is a very small community. Almost 200 workers were without a job for 4 years. And they basically, the USWA walked away from the mine. And to my knowledge, it's the only time that union has actually just walked away from a union shop. Most of those jobs were replaced by private contractors under a company called DynCorp. So in 2006, Goldcorp acquired Glamis Gold. And Glamis Gold had most of the operations throughout Mexico and Central America, as well as some in the U.S., that were among the most controversial mining projects at that time. And so, you know, Glamis also owned, some of you may have heard, in California, they had a Chapter 11. So they owned a mine they were trying to do a mining project in Quechuan territory in California, and the state of California required that they backfill their mining project so as to minimize damage specifically in sacred sites. And at that time, the company filed a Chapter 11 under NAFTA, saying that that was an unfair penalty and that they should be paid, basically, for that new requirement that would cost them so much more. So this is Glamis, which is now owned by Goldcorp. Glamis also had mines at the time in Guatemala, Mexico, and Honduras. And I include this picture above. The man in the photo, his name is Raul Castro Bosel. He was murdered on January 11th, 2005, by Guatemalan police while participating in a roadblock, which was set up to block the transport of equipment from Honduras to the Marlin mine, which was being set up in Guatemala. So already when Goldcorp acquired Glamis, it was a very controversial company. The San Martin mine in Honduras opened in 2000, and by 2007 it was in closure, and now it's still closed. A common saying about mining projects and economic development and so-called sustainability is that the only way to continue to generate jobs off a mining project once they've finished mining is basically to find more mineral and dig another hole. So what you have now in this community is piles of waste and toxic rivers and et cetera. The way that they carried out this project in Honduras is something very shocking. Like, you can see the little white sort of dot-looking things up there. Those are basically sprinklers spraying cyanide. So it's not being done in any kind of containment whatsoever. It's spraying into the air, and of course you see a house here in the front. But you know, this is something I think that even by the low standards that we have in Canada in terms of environmental protection and so on, simply would not be permitted here. So it's an open pit mine, and it's produced gold and silver. I also just wanted to point out that this mine produced 0.78 grams of gold per ton of ore. So we're talking about powder out of every ton of ore, and that's underneath the earth that they're digging up before they get to the ore. So this is a kind of mine that's only possible through basically heap leach cyanide lixivation, which is what they were using there. This is just a photo I wanted to include because I took it last time I was in Honduras, and it just gives you a feel for, this is someone's backyard. The region where this mine was built is very lush. It's not tropical, but it's extremely fertile, and people in the community would talk about how, you know, in the old days, they would gather their fruits and vegetables from their community, and they would take them to Tegucigalpa and sell them, and then they would come back, and they would that was how they could make money, through agriculture. And now, because of having had the mine there operating for 7 years, and the not only the poison of the water, but more so the overuse of the water by the mining project has led many farmers to simply abandon their fields because they don't have enough water. And so now they're actually going into Tegucigalpa to buy food to bring back to the community. Next slide. So these 4 points are from a letter sent by Carlos Amador from the Sierra Valley Environmental Committee to Andrew Petter. This letter was sent just this month in October, and he expressed his extreme disappointment with SFU having accepted this donation. And the reasons he pointed out, and he's writing on behalf of an environmental committee, are that they lost their access to safe water, to drinking water. Because of that, people are suffering problems of arsenic and lead contamination in their blood. That they've lost their food security, they don't have food sovereignty anymore. And that there has been more militarization and violence in their community and insecurity, partially because of guards and private security working for the company. Next. So these are some images taken from the Sierra Valley. And I was there, I guess, in 2006 for the first time. And we went and started asking some people if they knew anybody that had developed health problems related to the mine. And so we were taken to a woman's house, and she started to explain to us how new rashes were appearing and new things that they'd never, ever seen, like, in their community through all the years that they've lived there. You know, for hundreds of years, no one had ever seen anything like this. And now, you know, her child had this rash developed on the kid's skin. And while we were there talking to them, community members just kind of, like, were curious about what's going on. And by the time we were finished, there was probably, like, 30 or 40 people just, like, lining up, just, like, holding their kids in front of us and going, like, look at what is happening to our babies. So it's pretty hard to look at these images, but I'll show some from Guatemala later. But, you know, the company claims that it's because of bad hygiene. So the Marlin mine in Guatemala, this one, I actually made a mistake on there. It went into production in 2005. It's the largest operation of its kind in Central America. So the San Martin mine, when it was opened in Honduras, was the largest in Central America. And then this was the next one that Glamis and then Goldcorp opened up. And then that became the largest in Central America. And so I think that's actually something that the company uses to their benefit, is a general ignorance of the scale of these kind of operations, especially in campesino and indigenous communities where they have very little interaction with this kind of industry. Most of the work that they do in their territories is really land-based and actually highly sustainable. It's also an open pit mine, obviously, and it also uses cyanide lixiviation to separate the gold from the ore. They're also taking silver out of there. Next slide. So I just want to talk a little bit about the community of Sipakapa. The mine is actually based on two different Mayan nations' territory. One is Sipakapa, and the other one is San Miguel Ixtahuacan, where the population is Mam. And you can see here the kind of agriculture that they're doing in these communities. It's not even mechanized. And, you know, after spending about 6 months in this community, it was made absolutely clear to me that what they really wanted was actually irrigation. They just wanted a way to be able to water their land so that they could not do it by hand. And that was something that, of course, the mining company not only isn't providing, but they're also jeopardizing the water resources that do exist in the community. And this mining project in particular became an example of what not to do as a corporation in terms of free, prior, and informed consent with indigenous people. Because there was no proper process of consultation, which is required by Guatemalan law. Guatemala is a signatory to the International Labor Organization Convention 169, which actually requires that governments consult with local populations, indigenous populations, on behalf of corporations. And in the case of Guatemala, this didn't happen. So the people actually organized their own consultation. They call it a consulta. They followed the letter of the law according to the Constitution of the Republic, which does allow for these things. And it's also a traditional form of decision-making. And right before they actually held the consulta, the company went to court and they filed a suit of unconstitutionality. They said it is unconstitutional for these neighbors, these indigenous people, to get together and vote on this. And they won. And that may speak to the... to the situation of the Guatemalan judiciary, but that also was the jumping off point for the people from Sipakapa to actually go ahead, hold their consulta, have a majority community vote in 12 of the 14 communities against the mining project, and then they took their complaint to the International Commission on Human Rights, because that's sort of the next court that folks can access if they don't feel that their collective complaint is being addressed properly to national level. Next slide. So after a few years, I think the thing at the IACHR was filed in 2007. They did rule. So the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, which is part of the Organization of American States, asked the government of Guatemala to suspend mining activity at the Marlin Mine and take steps to protect the health of the surrounding indigenous communities. Probably nobody's surprised that the mine hasn't closed yet, but regardless, this statement has obviously vindicated the years of community organizing that they've been doing to assert their right to control what happens in their territory and also to protect future generations. So that's really small, I'm sorry about that, but in response to the ruling from the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, Goldcorp said, we believe the IACHR's action is based on environmental allegations that are entirely without merit. And I just put the images up above of the trucks and the tailings impoundment area at the Marlin Mine and also just another section of the Marlin Mine. I mean, anyone who thinks that that doesn't have an environmental impact is obviously getting paid really well to say it, as far as I can tell. And again, these same health concerns, exactly the same symptoms that were appearing in Honduras where the mine opened 5 years earlier, have started to appear. And it's the same, you know, it affects children. Some of these kids probably, I mean, obviously have been born since after the mine was open. And these are folks in communities, both in the case of Honduras and Guatemala, where they rely on the river for their drinking water, for bathing, for washing their clothes, They don't have a tap and a faucet going into their house. So folks are actually, you know, directly downstream from the mining project. And it's no wonder, really, that things like this, are going to follow. I'd also just like to point out that Goldcorp has had criminal charges pressed against it now. They had criminal charges pressed against them in Honduras in August of this year because of pollution, for polluting the water. And then they also just had criminal charges pressed against them in Guatemala by the Ministry of the Environment for the same reason, for polluting the water. Next. I'm sorry, this is so depressing, guys. So this is a new mine that they've just opened. They cut the ribbon on it this spring. It's in Zacatecas, Mexico, in a little community called Mazapil. And this mine is going to be 8 times larger than the Marlin mine. So this is something on a scale that, again, you know, it's like bigger every time. This is historically a gold or a silver mining area in Mexico, but it's a project that really no one in their right mind has any idea what the scale of this project is, because it is so enormous. It will be one of the largest mines in the world. I think the mine life there is about 22 years. The mine life in Guatemala is about 10 years. So again, just to be clear, obviously, when they're done taking all the gold out, they pack up shop and leave. This is going to be it's a gold mine, silver, lead, zinc, and it's on communally owned land, ejido land. And, you know, the conflicts actually haven't really started in this area. You can switch the slide if you want. But this is something that I'm bringing up because I think that it's going to become a massive conflict. Again, the amount of water that they're using in a semi-arid area where folks are, you know, struggling to actually be able to just squeak by and grow the crops they need to survive, their food sustainability is going to be totally threatened. So this is something I think that's going to be coming up over the next few years. Next slide. So who benefits? Obviously, certain shareholders benefit and the executives. This is from a protest that we did in 2007 against Goldcorp at their AGM here in Vancouver. And we had two community members come up, and we interrupted the AGM, and we also did an action outside. And the year before, the man who's currently the chairman of Goldcorp took home a paycheck of $23 million. Next. So, sorry, this is a little harder to read than I expected it to be. I just wanted to point out to everybody in the room that the Canadian Pension Plan is holding $256 million in Goldcorp shares, and the BC Investment Management Corporation, which is basically all public sector pensions in BC, which includes all college instructors and staff, all UVic profs and staff, all members and workers, BC Hydro, police, firefighter, and all municipal workers, among others, has $280 million invested in Goldcorp. And then below, I've just put that the company is not listed by Van City Ethical Funds, nor is it listed by Jansi Ethical Funds. That means it doesn't meet the screening guidelines for what an ethical investment is. It is, however, listed by a ethical funds company here in Vancouver, which is called Ethical Funds. And then I found this great high-resolution photo of Andrew Petter for my last slide. He's got a 9-megabyte photo of himself on the internet. I could have had just one tooth, but anyways. He told the Georgia Strait that the corporation's human rights record was a non sequitur. And I had to look it up. But basically it means something that does not follow logically or is not related to anything previously said. Basically, like the Quebecois would say, par rapport. Like it's not relevant, which I actually thought that's actually a really interesting admission, because he's not trying to defend the company. He knows he has no ground to stand on to defend this company on its human rights record, on its environmental record, on its social record. There is no ground to stand on. This has been reported by the BBC. This has been reported by CBC. You know, it's been investigated. The reports are done. We don't need to say that this is something that maybe they're abusing human rights. No, they're doing it. They've done it. And he's not even putting himself into that. He's not going to go into the quandary of trying to defend this corporation. So I think we can be confident that the communities have spoken, and they've spoken very loudly. And that's, I guess, how I'd like to end. Thank you.